I'm thinking more about the process of gathering people's stories. The other thing I'm always coping with is, how am I doing as an interviewer? We very rarely feature people who've been in the news or interviewed a lot. Once in a while we do, and then I can't help thinking, is this question the one they've answered 50 times before? How can I get them to talk the way they'd talk to a friend? What is it I really want to know? I guess a real journalist gets past all that and sort of separates out the human interest from the hard news, the inhuman interest. Just interviewing someone who hasn't recently planned to ravage a large number of people isn't really serious journalism. But it's more interesting to me, I guess, because I would rather focus on the great party we're invited to than the slaughterhouse we're leaving.
So one weekend, we drove up to a little town named Hopland, about an hour north of here, to a big outdoor environmental festival, and we met Doris Haddock.
For the first 89 years of her life, Doris Haddock managed to stay out of the headlines. But that didn't last.
There are two kinds of politics in the world. The politics of love and the politics of fear. Love is about cooperation.
This is Doris Haddock. I live in Dublin, New Hampshire, and I'm 93 years old. And now I've been on the road for 3 years, not walking, but ending up in airplanes for the last 3 years. And then, well, it took me 14 months to cross the country on foot.
On January 1st, 2000, Doris Haddock, who came to be known as Granny D, began a campaign to promote campaign finance reform by walking across the United States. And now she's flying about making speeches. We wanted to know, what got you here from wherever you were before?
Up through the age of 89, which was when I went on the trip. Well, I was, there were five of us, four girls and a boy. My father was a working man. He hadn't much schooling, probably through the eighth grade. I went to public schools, and I mostly was a clown. To get attention, I clowned, and I longed to be an actress. All through my high school, but I could see that there was no way that I was going to be able to do it because there was no means. Well, it seemed there was a boy who was in our class, who was president of the class in high school, came home at Christmas time, and he said, why are you doing here? I thought you were going to go to a school of the drama. And I said, there's no way I can do that. Yes, there is, he said. I'm working at Harvard Business School, and I can get you a job there. But I thought he'd just forget it. But on the contrary, he remembered it, and he wrote to me a letter and told me how it could be set up. And my father and mother said, well, if Alan says it's all right, I guess it's all right. He wasn't anybody that was interested in me as a boyfriend or anything. So he got me to the city, and I went to Emerson School. And I was there 3 years before I fell in love with someone and talked me into getting married during the Christmas break. So it was right in the middle of depression, and he couldn't find a job. And in 6 months, I got pregnant. So we were married and had two children, and we were married for 62 years. And we put two kids through college, and we retired. I retired in 62, and he was 65. We had a wonderful 20 years, and then he got Alzheimer's, and he was sick for 10 years, and I took care of him.
Briefly, in the 60s, through their Episcopal priest, they got involved in a campaign to stop an underground nuclear test in the Arctic.
Now, my husband, besides working as an electric engineer, had a hobby of mathematics. And he wrote to the Livermore Laboratory and asked them for figures on what had happened with the trials that they had made in the Arizona Tuff, where they were They were trying out underground explosions. And they sent him figures, not knowing that who he was or anything about him. And he immediately took them and figured out that the wave that would be caused by this explosion would ruin the village. Then my husband took slides of the whole village, and we went on a dog and pony show on weekends. We'd go here, there, and everywhere, show our slides and talk about this problem. And all we did was stall it. And then Kennedy talked with Khrushchev, and they agreed that there would be no more underground bombing. So my husband and I were accredited for helping to stall it. Oh, yeah, we were working all the time. But at night, I acted as secretary, and I write hundreds of letters to everywhere that my husband could look and find help.
And that was pretty much the extent of her activism until 30 years later.
We are the sons and daughters of liberty in that struggle. Indeed, we are. Let us not shrink from the mission.
And when he died, I read an article in the paper about the corruption that was going on in the country. And first I had a group, we called ourselves Tuesday Morning Academy, Old Women. And we set up a petition, and the whole thing took us a couple, year and a half to get done. And we began then getting cookie cutter letters back from our senators saying, "Dear little old ladies, don't trouble yourselves. We are taking care of this." And my son said, "Come with me. I'm going to Florida." And on the way, we saw an old man in the middle of nowhere. And he had a bag on his back and a cane. And I said to my son, "What is he doing in the middle of nowhere?" And he said, "He's on the road again." And I said, "I'm going on the road." My son said, "A lot of people go across the country, but they go for peace, or they go to self-satisfaction or to find themselves, but you really need to have a cause to do it." I said, "Oh, I have a cause, all right." He said, "Oh, campaign finance reform." And I said, "Yes." So we discussed it, and finally he said, "Well, if you train for it, I'll let you go. You know, they become your parent when you're 80 years old." So he put me through a year's training. So as I trained to be able to do 10 miles a day, I carried a 29-pack on my back through the hills of New Hampshire, and I couldn't find any organization that gave me the time of day except Common Cause, who finally said, "Well, what can we do for you?" And I said, "Send notices to all your members in the 11 states in which I will be traveling and tell them that I'm traveling as a pilgrim." And that's what they did, and what happened. I don't know, it was hard. I didn't think of it as hard. I thought of it as a job, something you had to do. The having to do it every day was hard. Some days you didn't feel like it, but you knew it had to be. You had to be disciplined to do it. You had to recognize that it didn't matter whether it was raining or whether it was too hot or whether it was a difficult particular terrain. You had to do it, and if you stopped, then everything that you'd done was gone. So the game was to finish it. And when I did, I got help, of course, all across. Thousands of people helped me, and thousands of people came out to cheer me on, and it was like a parade when I went about halfway across the country, when people began recognizing that I was established, doing something important. And the media all the way across, local media was wonderful. And it got so that people in Texas, it was a game to find Granny D. You know, they'd find me. I was like a bird hunt. You know, they'd find me, and then they'd call on their websites where I was. we weren't allowed. We were not supposed to go on the interstates. We went on the what they call the frontage roads, and on rare occasions when we had to go on the interstate because there was no frontage road, it was against the law, of course. But I never got picked up.
We didn't talk a lot about the hike itself, which took 14 months, included desert exhaustion, blizzards, crossing mountains on skis, 10 miles a day for 14 months. You can read about it on the web or in her recent book. I asked, what gave you the idea that you could possibly do that?
I don't know. I can't imagine why ever in the world I thought I could do it. It was crazy, it really was. But I had complete faith in myself that all I needed to do was put a pack on my back with 5 pounds of trail mix, which I had eaten for a week and knew I could do it if I had to, and the sleeping bag. And I had lain on the ground in the woods for a month in cold weather in the sleeping bag, which is a stunt if you're 89 and you need to get out a couple of times in the night. I also I knew that if I wasn't able to accomplish it or didn't find it fun, my son insisted that I go out and thumb a distance, and so I got out. I had to go to a funeral up north in New Hampshire, and I brought my pack with my sleeping bag and trail mix, and I started thumbing. And people that were between the ages of 18 and 30, all who had done the same thing, picked me up. And I talked about campaign finance reform, and they got rid of me as fast as they could. But I traveled 250 miles in a day, and that was all I needed to prove to my son that I could do it.
On the trip, she celebrated her 90th birthday. She finished the hike. She was in the headlines. She got her moment of fame. It was finished. But not quite.
I do not mean that the politicians necessarily know what they are doing. The corruption is so immense that they cannot even see it, even when it pays the finances for their re-election. How free are you now, my friends? Check your bills and your bank account. How much time the Bush administration, you can call them neos or neoliberals or neoconservatives, or they're neo nothing except perhaps neocolonial and neolithic.
The only time I got arrested was when I went with a group into the People's Hall in the Capitol. They come and announce with a bullhorn 3 times that you are trespassing. And, of course, we say that this is our hall, and the Constitution says if you object to what is going on in your government, it's your citizen's duty to do something about it. So that's what we did, and we were arrested and just taken to a holding cell while we were fingerprinted, and then we had to come back in a couple of months and appear before a judge. And he could have charged us $500 or kept us for 6 months, but he didn't either, and said that the least he could do was to charge us $10 each, and said that he appreciated what we had done, and that what had done was needed to be done, that sometimes the populace gets ahead of the government, and you need to then wake up the masses to let them know that what is going on in the government. So that's what we did. Yes, yes, that is true. I do feel that it's finished. I've done what I proposed to do, but I'm very greedy. I want more. It changed my life, and when I returned to where I was previously, I found it very difficult in a lot of ways. One thing, I had received a great deal of attention. Now I wasn't Granny D anymore, I was just Doris Haddock. But what is important it wasn't me. It had nothing to do with me. It is the mission, the mission, the mission. And that mission was in my mind and my being, so that it took over, and it was the only thing that mattered to me.
In the past 3 years, she's made countless speeches. She's written a book. During the final debate on the McCain-Feingold bill, she circled the Capitol building for 7 days, the last three 24 hours a day. And speeches planned weekly around the country for the full year up to this election, with a single message: vote.
The forces of life and death are in struggle, for those are the other names for love and fear. Let us choose life. Let us choose love, and happily use ourselves up in this service.
There were five of us, and I always felt and do think that being a second girl gives an entirely different attitude towards life. I don't think it's as bad to be a second boy as it is to be a second girl. And you fight like mad for your place in the sun.
In Hopland, California, we were talking with Doris Haddock. Her very beautiful book, Granny D, You're Never Too Old to Raise a Little Hell, is available at bookstores, and news is on her website, www.grannyd.com. And thanks also to Tom Bleese, a novelist, the host for her California trip.
Hitchhiking Off the Map is produced by the Independent Eye with funding from the National Endowment for the Arts and from the Hitchhikers Guild, which you can join by visiting our website, www.hitching.org.
And send us your stories. And remember, you can listen to our past shows on the website and purchase our CD anthologies for gifts or just for yourself.
Yes, CDs, Immigrants, Life Journeys, Chronicles of Childbirth Experiences, The Descent of the Goddess Inanna, 55 90-second dramas about families, Diversity Is Us. And, well, if the news, friends, is really getting you down, then maybe you need to gather around to hear the adventures of Walt, Patty, and the gang. Wit and wisdom from the belly of the beast. Check it out on the website, www.hitching.org.
And next month, we recently opened a brand new show on stage with my music and Conrad's storytelling, and we'll hear a one-hour version of that. It's called Survival Tips for the Plague Years. And it's everything from fairy tale magic to really down and dirty sardonic satire, and then some metaphors for what we're going through now from biblical sources.
So join us. This is, yes it is, still Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller.
Peace and joy.
I had an event to attend. It was a book signing in a town that was difficult to get to. So I asked this couple of mine if they would come, and this couple or friend, she plays Scrabble with me once a week with two others. And I said, well, would they be available? Oh, yes, they'd love to do it. Well, it was a book signing, and when I got there, they all jumped up and clapped and cheered, and some of them who knew me came and gave me big hugs and so forth. My two friends stood there with mouth open. I said, what is this? I said, well, this is Granny D. My goodness, we had no idea people knew who you were.